And this is John Richardson speaking with you once again with David Lesperance. We are continuing our general discussion of citizenship by investment. And today we are going to talk specifically about the opportunities that exist in Canada and why Canada is an interesting destination for citizenship and residency generally, and what the opportunities may be. So turning this back over to David. Yeah, you know, I was looking at your site a couple of months ago, actually, and I came across, it wasn't hard, it's a featured post, I think. You proposed a second residence in Canada, dated May 21st, 2020. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that was incredibly interesting. Post.
Well, whenever I mention Canada as a potential tax havens to Canadians, they just shake their heads. And I'm going to throw out to the audience one tax equation. X times Y equals, because it's a Canadian audience, Z. X is taxable income. Y is rate. Z is the dollars paid in tax. So obviously the goal is to keep Z as low as possible. X is what it is, or I'm sorry, Y, which is the rate, is what it is. So taxable income times rate equals dollars paid. The rate is whatever it is, combined provincial and federal, or in the US, state and federal. And in the case of New York City, for example, city taxes also. All of the planning and sometimes regimes really focus on X, because zero times an even 99.9% rate is still $0 paid. So Canada, first off, to an American, we don't have a state tax or gift tax. The second thing is, especially when we had something called the Section 94 Immigrant Trust, you could put all your non-Canadian source income and capital gain producing assets into a non-Canadian trust, and that wasn't included in X. So again, greatly reduced the amount of tax. There's still some estate tax and some other things that tax lawyers that I work with do to reduce that amount. But for an American, it's the one advantage is you've eliminated gift and estate tax. And that's true if you're immigrating from any estate tax jurisdiction, for example, the UK or the US. You can do some pre-immigration tax planning to reduce so that your burden is significantly lower than it was in the United States. It's also very close. You can stay in the same time zone. It's very familiar to Americans. It also has a particular advantage, this substantial presence test, which was one of the ways that you became a U.S. person for tax purposes. It's the number of counting days. Well, a day that you come from a contiguous territory, such as Canada or Mexico, doesn't count towards that day count. So my original client, who I did the expatriation in 1990, was a Detroit area lawyer. He would wake up in Canada, commute to the United States. He could get to his downtown Detroit office faster from Windsor than he could from the suburbs of Detroit, spend the day in the office, come back, and he never acquired a day towards a substantial presence test. Now, it was a wonderful little structure, and it worked in the rules in 1990. He had about 3 years left of cases that he wanted to do in the United States. He had acquired citizenship in this place called St. Kitts and Nevis, which I knew was in the Caribbean, but I confess I had to pull out an atlas to actually see where it was. We got him Canadian permanent residence. We renounced his U.S. citizenship. We got him a non-immigrant visa that allowed him to work, so he wasn't working illegally in the United States. He put all his after U.S. tax assets into a non-Canadian trust. An American trust is just as offshore to Canada as a Cayman trust. He would then was accumulating days towards his Canadian citizenship, not accumulating days towards his substantial presence, would generate income off these remaining U.S. source, but pay because it was U.S. source to the Americans first, who would pay the differential in tax to the Canadians, put the net proceeds into the offshore trust. After 3 years of naturalization, at some point in the fourth year, he became a Canadian citizen. And before the end of the fifth year, when his Section 94 trust holiday expired, he became non-resident in Canada. And it worked wonderfully. And interestingly, when COVID hit, this same client who's lived in all over the world, he's lived in New Zealand and Australia and in Austria and in Hungary, decided to come back to Canada. Of course, he's a Canadian citizen because he thought the Canadians were going to do better than the Americans for COVID. So you never know what's going to happen in the future.
That is true. I mean, I'm assuming that your view then, both just based on things you've written and that story you just gave your 1990 client, your view would be that Canada's residence and citizenship would be a very good backup plan for a lot of people.
It is. And Canada would do well, and Canadian politicians would do well, to consider programs which were a little more straightforward in acquiring Canadian immigration. I understand the split jurisdiction between provinces and the federal government. The immigrant investor program, I think if it was better designed so it had a more direct impact for the Canadian economy and was better designed on screening and source of funds and all those things, it's simpler to understand and explain to clients than looking at comparing the BC to the Alberta to the Saskatchewan right. to the Manitoba, blah, 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 all the way down the line, you know, whatever their provincial nominee programs were.
I think it would help Canada if they had a clear retirement visa.
They had a retirement visa. They had a retirement visa back in 1990. They still had one, but they closed it in the early 90s. And I think that would be a very beneficial thing. And one of the biggest concerns that Canadians would have would be, of course, a drain on the Canadian medical system. And you have as a requirement of that retirement visa that they have, you know, their own medical insurance so that they're not being a burden. And they can be those golden geese who sure. come and stay in Canada and do all those things that the Italians and the Brits and the Greeks and the Swiss think is so valuable.
Yeah, one of the things that strikes me, this is my sort of thinking about Canada, is that, and it was interesting to me in your article that you, at some point, you either said or implied that Canada could be thought of as a tax haven. I think that Canada, partly because of a conservative political process and that, is probably a better place for the retention of wealth, you know, in a highly chaotic world than, say, you know, the United States or the UK. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It's interesting. A large group of my clients right now are high net worth Mexicans who are concerned that their president, who goes by the acronym AMLO, is going to bring in tax the rich policies. The peso is dropping. They passed some tax laws that were quite onerous. Their first view is the United States. It's something familiar to them, but they're worried what's going to happen in the United States. And a lot of them are very interested and are looking at investing in Canada because they view Canada as there's rule of law. They view it as very stable. They kind of know what they're getting. And if they can do that in a tax efficient manner, and there's a number of tax lawyers I work with that set up structures that do that, I'm certainly seeing a lot of people put their assets into Canada because they view it as a safe haven.
What are your thoughts? I mean, nobody can predict the future. But Canada has fewer kinds of taxes, I think, than some other countries. It's very high income tax rates, but as you point out, there are other taxes that it doesn't have. Do you see Canada as a safer place for the preservation of wealth than, say, the United States or some European countries?
Canada has a couple of advantages. Number one is that the currency, compared to, you know, very volatile conservative currencies such as the peso or the Brazilian real, etc., it's a very stable currency. So you can lose value if your currency is dropping. The other is the tax rates are fairly stable. And well, I'm well aware that the NDP were talking about wealth taxes, etc. It didn't gain the same political steam that it did in the United States. I mean, one of the things to understand is that the Democratic Party passed as a policy having capital gains rates increase to ordinary tax rates. Well, that's effectively a doubling of the tax bill for clients.
Of the gain included. 100% yeah. Of the gain included.
And Canada has not been doing that. And I think that's also because Canada, the reason that they don't have estate taxes, which Canada certainly had at one point, because they realized that their golden geese could move to places like Lyford Key or Bermuda or other places outside of Canada. And, you know, the art of taxation is, you know, plucking the goose with the minimum amount of hissing. And the art of dealing with taxation with the golden geese is you have to not tax them so much that they are willing to overcome life inertia and move from your jurisdiction. Because if you keep adding new tax burdens onto them and they leave, not only do you not get the additional windfall, you lose the prior tax revenue that you were so desperately reliant on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, my personal view is that Canada is a very good place to consider for people who already have money, who already have wealth, as sort of a backup thing. Interesting.
And especially from an estate tax purpose. For estate tax, again, Canada could be very much an attractive jurisdiction to Americans, for example, to Brits, other European countries which have estate tax. It could be very, very attractive. And again, it's a multicultural country. You know, the people can feel very familiar. It's an easy place to adapt to. And if you don't like, you know, cold, which everybody talks about, but as a Torontonian, you know, you also have to worry about 30 degrees Celsius, 90% humidity, August days. You know, you can
run in the winters.
Yeah, you don't have to spend all of your time here. So you decide, you pick what seasons and what environment you want to be in. And, you know, and it's very safe place, especially compared to a lot of other jurisdictions.
So a moment ago, you said that you perceive the idea of a wealth tax as gaining more traction politically in the United States than in Canada. If I'm understanding you correctly, can you elaborate on that a bit?
Sure. So Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren introduced the concept of a wealth tax in this cycle. There was no talk about that in 2016. It was a bit of a Trojan horse. What that people said, well, wealth tax is a bridge too far right now. And remember, this was all pre-COVID. Is a bridge too far, but that made the increase from capital gains tax to ordinary tax more palatable. And that ended up being actually the platform. Well, now you've got COVID, which has hit, which has had a not only devastating expenses, and that will be ongoing, but you've also had quite a large group of the population, which is unemployed, disenfranchised, and really needs to do major adjustments, and large portions of which may be left behind. And you're going to have, and you're already seeing a great push in the United States to tax the rich. I mean, you know, people talk about, oh, Jeff Bezos and, you know, became a pandemic privateer, profiteer. And I'm thinking, well, I don't really remember the night Bezos came into my bedroom and put a gun to my head and said, you know, join Prime or die. They just delivered a service that was necessary at that point. And people figured that that service was worth the price that they were asking. You can say that maybe you should spend more money on employee salaries, et cetera, but he just had a successful delivery model in an extraordinary situation that worked really well. And so, you know, that didn't make him evil all of a sudden, but there is a tremendous backlog. And likewise, you know, I have clients who have the means to get second homes or relocate and do things. They're mothers and fathers. What's the first thing that you want to do in a pandemic? Well, you want to protect yourself and your family. Just because you're wealthy and you have the means to do more than somebody who can't move out of their current situation doesn't instantly make you evil or a bad person. And so there is a kind of tremendous backlog. And I'm particularly seeing that in the United States for the first time. We're seeing...
We're also seeing, I think, a historical disparity, if you will, between the, you know, the upper class and the other classes. So
absolutely. And one of the things, I think the way to successfully deal with that is to convince, and a lot of my clients engage in strategic philanthropy because they believe that, you know, the money that they don't need for their lifestyle, they have lifestyles from austere to ostentatious, the monies they don't want to leave to their children, which range from I'll pay for your college to I'll take care of you to the rest of your life, they have money over and above that. And they know, they're sophisticated people. They know that if that goes into the tax system, most of that will be absorbed by non-discretionary spending. It won't go towards these special programs to deal with specific societal ills, whether that's, you know, early childhood education or, you know, meals for seniors or whatever it is. Whereas if they engage in strategic philanthropy, they know that they will have an effective impact. If you look at Bill Gates, in the 100 years from the time that discovered that mosquitoes were a vector for malaria, all the world governments put a whole bunch of time, energy, and money into it. One person, using a portion of his wealth, in 10 years, did much more than all those other governments did over 100 years. So that shows the power of strategic philanthropy. And that's really what a lot of clients are doing. So if you want to deal with the problems, and there are absolutely problems, you know, try to encourage strategic philanthropy, because whether you're wealthy or not, when you're dead, you're dead. And so, you know, you know, seeing the impact of that will have a lot more. Whereas if you just say, we're going to take it from you because you're a bad person, they're going to hire people like me and fly the coop.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, on that note, why don't we wrap this up for today? But this is, I introduced so many topics that I'm sure we can pick this up as we go along. David, your coordinates, how would somebody get in touch with you if they were so inclined?
They can, at my website, and one of my vows for for 2021 is to make this shorter, is lesperanceassociates.com. And John, if you can do, put something on your website for that. It's L-E-S-P-E-R-A-N-C-E, associates, plural.com. That's the website. On there will be the contact, telephone numbers, emails, etc. And they can have a look at the site. We have a lot of material on blogs and case studies, etc. That will give them a lot of things to think about.
All right. Well, that's great. And David, I really appreciate the opportunity to have spoken with you today.
Thank you, John, for starting off, letting me start off the new year with a interesting conversation with you.
Absolutely. And I hope we can continue this as the year continues. So thanks very much, David.
Thank you.